From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth has had trouble bringing inner-city kids into its programs. African-American kids from lower socioeconomic backgrounds haven't done well on the standardized tests the center typically uses. So the center is looking for new ways to identify bright kids from underserved neighborhoods. The result is the Baltimore Emerging Scholars Program. The program director and a Center for Talented Youth researcher join us. We'll also hear the impressions of fourth grader Santino Vaughn, who seemed impressed with an astronomy lesson involving a grapefruit and a flashlight.
We saw the phases of a moon, we saw the crescent moon, we saw the half moon, we saw the gibbous moon, and then we saw the full moon.
It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Today, we're going to talk about a pilot program that seeks to challenge gifted elementary school students in underserved communities. It's called Baltimore Emerging Scholars. It's in its third year in three Baltimore schools and one in Laurel. Amy Lynn Shelton is here to tell us about it. She's director of research for the Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth and a professor and associate dean for research in the Johns Hopkins School of Education. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you, and it's great to be here.
Give us your elevator pitch. What is Baltimore Emerging Scholars?
So the CTY Baltimore Emerging Scholars is a program designed to do two things. One is it's to recognize that underrepresented populations sometimes don't get the benefits of enriched programs, advanced learning opportunities, things that allow kids to thrive in schools. And we developed a program in order to both find better ways to identify children who might need this kind of programming, but also to deliver it in a way that is keeping students in their own settings, giving them a sort of a taste of the kinds of things that advanced programming has to offer. So the upshot of the program is we have schools help us identify students who need enrichment or faster pace or something that sort of sparks their learning at a higher rate, and have those identified students come in and do a course designed specifically for those students with higher learning needs.
Before you go on, I want to unpack some of that.
Absolutely.
When you say you focused on identifying youth, I understand the Center for Talented Youth has had trouble recruiting African-American students from low-income areas.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
That's the driving force behind this program. Was there's a reality in the world of high-need students at the advanced learning end of the spectrum, so students who have really high academic potential. There's several facts that are problematic for us. One is that there's many populations that are underrepresented. And the reason behind that is largely due to the fact that we use standardized testing for academic abilities, as the marker of, do you need these programs? Should you be in these programs? And will you thrive in these programs? And those tests seem to have both cultural biases, but also they're very much wed to the kinds of opportunities you've had available to you. So if you have a student from an under-resourced community, these tests may not capture their actual ability because they are so dependent on curriculum. So we think it's a matter of these tests do a good job of finding the right kids if those kids have had, you know, a decent amount of opportunity and a culture in which this has been valued and valuable to them. In under-resourced communities, those kids are there. They have the motivation. They have the excitement. They have the interest. But they're not necessarily going to show it on this test for us. And so we needed some other way to think about how to find these students.
And so that other way,
there's lots of things people have tried, and one of our goals was to say, well, what other cognitive skills could we test? That was just a very basic idea. And when we got down to saying, well, how do you do that? How do you test other kinds of skills? So skills that are a little bit less dependent on academics, such as your ability to reason about objects and spaces in the world, your working memory capacity, the speed with which you can process visual information. All of these are cognitive skills that we know are related to academic performance, but they're not as dependent on having had a classroom experience or even an out-of-classroom experience to enhance those academic skills. And so there's a couple different routes you can go. You can just use those tests and see who they identify. We thought that could work, but that doesn't help us with some of the other areas that are problematic. For example, in a lot of these populations, they don't see these programs as necessarily being for them. A great example of this is a parent from our program who called me and said, I think there's a mistake. My son's been identified to be in this program, but this says this is for students with high academic potential. He's bright, but I don't think you mean him. And I had to sort of talk her into it. And she was thrilled and excited that he was going to get this opportunity, but she was nervous. Well, I got a voicemail about 2 months later, and she said her son was just having the time of his life and was seeing himself in that light of, I can do this. I can be good at school. I can enjoy being good at school. So there's this cultural piece. The students and the families don't necessarily see something like CTY as something that's for them. So rather than simply testing the skills and seeing who emerges, we wanted to craft something that was more robust to say, well, what if instead we ask the schools to tell us who are the kids that might be appropriate for this kind of program, that might need this kind of enrichment, give them that kind of programming and see how they do. See if we can see that they are the type of child that will thrive, that this will enhance their education. And so that's one big piece of it, was to say, if we want to know who's going to really benefit from these programs, we need to see how they do in those programs. And then we could build around that a research project to say, now let's characterize the ones that are doing really well, the ones that seem to really enjoy the program, which tends to be the bulk of them.
Before you started Baltimore Emerging Scholars, what kind of acceptance rate or what kind of results were you getting in Baltimore City schools compared to all the schools that you touch with the Center for Talented Youth?
So our typical approach is students come to what we call the talent search, and they come because somebody has said they're doing really well, usually, you know, on a grade level test or in school they're excelling. And when those students come to our talent search, we have probably about a 75% of those students will qualify for some sort of advanced programming at CTY. When we were looking at Baltimore City, we would test many, many students. There was one year in which we tested about 400 Baltimore City students, and only about 40 qualified. So we were getting somewhere in a 10 to 20% rate of qualifying for Baltimore City.
Let me just say, this is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Amy Lynn Shelton, Director of Research for the Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth. We're talking about a new pilot program called Baltimore Emerging Scholars. It offers specific academic programming for talented elementary school students in underserved schools. I want to understand better that research piece that you just flagged.
Absolutely. So as I was saying, if the big question we have is, can we make better tools for identification of students who need these kinds of programs and who will benefit from them? By taking a group of students in these schools and having the schools say, these are the ones we think will do well, that's sort of like a talent search population. And in a typical talent search population, some percentage of those will go on to qualify for the really highest level needs. And here what we've done is we've said, give us those students. And then while we're delivering this course that allows us to see which ones are looking like a CTY student, which ones look like they need this program, we can do other kinds of tests. We give them these cognitive skills that I was mentioning earlier, working memory, spatial reasoning skills, some critical thinking pieces. And we can ask the question, now what does this population look like when we use those tests? And the early data that we have shows us that if you look at an academically based skill like verbal skills, our population is falling where we'd expect it to, that they're not quite looking like a CTY population. However, if you look at some of these other areas, spatial skills in particular, we're starting to see that when you look at those skills, the same students that are thriving now in this program that look like a CTY student also look like a CTY student on those skills and not the others. So this is a way of us using a program and offering something very robust that we hope will continue as also an inroad to saying, maybe these are other skills we could test. So now, rather than having to be in the program entirely, we could scale up and use other kinds of tests.
So you made it clear that these results are preliminary, but what are the implications both for the Center for Talented Youth and education more broadly?
The implications are that we have a tendency, again, to think of academic predictors being academic skills like math and verbal reasoning, which we do know do predict your academic performance under many conditions. If we can broaden that set to skills that are less curriculum dependent, we can actually see emerging ability in populations that have not historically been easy to identify. For us at CTY, we know this is a way to get students into our program who will do well because some of these students have now come to program and are doing very well. And so even though it is preliminary, this may be an inroad for us to start finding students that have historically not been easy to identify.
But why not make this kind of programming available to all kids in underserved areas rather than just those who show promise?
The strongest school system is going to be one where all students' needs are met. But when you think about needs, it's not the same opportunity for all students. It's tailoring that opportunity. I think a lot of what we're doing in the program is something that could be done for many, many students. But the way we actually run it, it's designed at a faster pace, at a deeper dig into the material. And so it's really tailored for a particular population of students. And it's a population of students that are often missed, especially in these under-resourced communities. In the same way a student who's struggling should get programming that maybe slows the pace down and gives them an enrichment in a different style, a student who is at the advanced ability stage will, you know, halt their learning, will not make the growth that they need to if they're not given the kinds of enrichment.
And what is the Center for Talented Youth's goal for the future with Baltimore Emerging Scholars?
So the hope for this is for the program to both deliver on the research piece by giving us tools that can be used even outside this program. So if we can establish a set of cognitive skills that do a good job of helping us say these are the kids that belong in our programming because they need this kind of enrichment, that's one piece that we really hope will happen. The other piece is that it's a very valuable program in and of itself. We want to expand it in the city. And to do that, we need to shift our model from this very small pilot, very much delivered by CTY, to one that involves a teacher training component. So our goal for the future is to continue to develop a multi-stage curriculum, train teachers in the schools to deliver it so that not only can they take over our program, but they can then expand this program in other ways once they're trained to manage and handle it.
I really appreciate you telling us about it. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Wonderful to be here.
Amy Lynn Shelton is Director of Research for the Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth and a Professor and Associate Dean for Research in the Johns Hopkins School of Education. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Quick break now. When we come back, we'll hear from the program manager of Baltimore Emerging Scholars, as well as a boy who enjoyed the program so much the first time around, he's doing it again. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about a pilot program that aims to give promising students from underserved communities an extra academic boost. It's a project of the Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth, and it's called Baltimore Emerging Scholars. We turn now to Center for Talented Youth Program Manager Andrew Moss, who has also taught in the Emerging Scholars Program. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is fourth grader Santino Vaughn. He is a student at Mount Royal Elementary School who participated in the Baltimore Emerging Scholar Program last year. Welcome to On the Record, Santino.
Hello, happy to be here.
Andrew Moss, tell us about the two courses that are currently offered through the Baltimore Emerging Scholars Program.
So we previously offered two courses where we had a spies and espionage for 6th and 7th graders.
Spies and espionage.
Spies and espionage. So we wanted to choose something interdisciplinary. And so that's what we started with, along with space and astronomy, which is what Santino used. And that's for 3rd and 4th graders. Now, right now, we've pulled back from the spies and espionage class because we really wanted to focus solely on the elementary school. So with space and astronomy, it is a 25-week course. Students meet once a week. And so every week, students get a number of different activities to do, not only in science and math, but also in writing and humanities as well. So we'll learn about the history behind the space race, potentially. You might learn about what a black hole is. You might learn about what would aliens be like.
It sounds really interesting, but why these particular topics? Why spies and espionage? Why space and astronomy?
Because we wanted to choose topics that we thought students would want to learn about after school. They're very tired at the end of the school day, and we wanted to choose academic topics that would really engage and enthrall them in ways that could potentially lead into future careers. Obviously, we have Fort Meade very nearby, and we look at cryptological issues in the spies and espionage class, but simultaneously, we have NASA and Greenbelt, and so these would also be wonderful opportunities for students.
Santino, you took the space and astronomy course last year. What made you want to do it?
I really get into science, so I thought it was awesome. And because I really want to learn more about space, because I literally only know how the order of the planets are. So I want to learn, like, how big the planets are and their diameter. And I want to learn how their orbit is and how far actual Pluto is. So I want to learn more about space than in astronomy than we just learned in class.
And how was this different from your regular school classes?
Because it was way smaller and it was way more interactive.
Tell me about that.
Like, we were actually able to, like, get up and do, like, demonstrations with, like, a grapefruit and a flashlight.
What did you demonstrate with a grapefruit and a flashlight?
We saw the phases of a moon. We saw the crescent moon. We saw the half moon. We saw the gibbous moon. And then we saw the full moon.
What was your favorite part of the whole course?
Probably the part where we... This was last year where we had a piece of cardboard and we had a paper and we used like an elastic to make an orbit of the planets. It was very fun.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Santino Vaughn, a 10-year-old who has participated in a new pilot program out of the Johns Hopkins Center for Talented Youth called Baltimore Emerging Scholars, and with program director Andrew Moss. Andrew Moss, the topics really sound like not typical elementary school courses. Is the manner of instruction also different?
Yeah, I mean, at CTY, we really focus on hands-on activities. And so we want to offer as many different activities that are going to give students the chance to be the inquirer as much as experimenting themselves. And so what we do is we pose a topic, maybe 10-minute discussion, and then we actually give three different activities per topic in an effort for students to kind of teach themselves and teach others simultaneously with the instructor.
Give me an example.
So a great example is the black hole experiment that we do with students. And so what we do is we talk to students briefly about a black hole and what that entails. That's kind of a difficult topic to consider when you're in elementary school.
Conceptually, it's a big challenge.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to conceptualize sometimes. So what we do is we take a T-shirt and we have students stretch it out. And then we use a lacrosse ball to put it in the middle. And that simulates a black hole because it drops the fabric down. And then we have students using smaller marbles try and make planets, simulated planets, move from one end of the T-shirt to the other. And what they find is it's very difficult to do because the weight of the lacrosse ball levels things in a way where trying to manage and navigate it so that the marbles can make it from one end to the other is impossible. So they see that it sinks down into the bottom of the shirt and they realize, oh, almost nothing can escape a black hole.
That's an example in the science realm, space and astronomy. Learning about espionage is not obviously something that will directly prepare a kid for college or the job market. What is the goal of that program?
I mean, the goal is to try and engage students in different ways of thinking. So, no, you know, if you put, I learned about spies and espionage on your resume, it's probably not going to get you a first interview, potentially, unless you're in the CIA. But what we can do is we can teach students critical reasoning skills, and that spies have to use quite often. And so we ask students to consider different variables when posing problems. So what might it be like to see if someone is telling a fib or not? And so we had students look at body language and what's the effectiveness of body language. And we looked at the ethics behind polygraphs. Is it right that an employer or the CIA is able to polygraph you before becoming a part of the institution itself? And it led to very interesting discussions back and forth of what is right, what is wrong, what are personal rights? And so students, when initially talking about the subject, realize that there's a much greater depth of knowledge that they need to acquire and to think about the ethical implications of whether it's right for employers to do something like that.
And these kids, again, in spies and espionage, they're what grade level?
So these were sixth and seventh graders. And again, we pulled back from that program because we're developing a second and third grade program so that students like Santino can begin in second grade and then they would have three solid years in a row. And actually, just on Wednesday, we put together a curriculum workshop in which we're working with a second grade architecture course and a third grade engineering course that we hope to implement next year.
How did you decide how to expand that curriculum?
So we thought, what would be a great topic in which we can identify students more easily in the Baltimore City school system? And spatial reasoning was one of those preliminary identifiers that we wanted to focus on. And so we thought, well, what topic works well with that? And we thought architecture, because there are shapes involved in architecture. And then simultaneously, we were also thinking, based upon the architecture, where would we want to go from there? And students have a great interest in engineering, and we've previously seen that in other summer programs classes. And so we wanted to look at, well, what can we do with engineering? And so we're going to have students take various activities in which they'll explore mass and force and gravity and do separate activities every one of the 25 weeks, and then be able to have a compilation of knowledge that they'll then take with them to in physics classes, both in middle and high school.
Santino, if you could pick another topic area, what would you pick?
Maybe geography, because I love learning about different countries and their main animal and stuff. I love learning about that and what their biggest ocean is. I think that that's really cool.
I understand that you liked the space and astronomy class so much you decided to take it a second time.
Yes, because I thought that I wanted to experience another person. Maybe we'll learn different stuff, because I do not remember using a grapefruit in the flashlight last year.
Have you made new friends in the program?
Yes, because another school really close to our school called Midtown Academy was able to get into it. So, yeah, so I got to meet new friends from there.
And you went on to do a summer program with Center for Talented Youth after the space and astronomy class. What was that like?
It was very cool, because that was my first time in the actual private school. So I thought it was really cool to see how the actual day was able to go along. And I thought it was really cool that we could take a course that we really wanted to take, and that we would have to test to get into it, and then we would be challenged more.
Listening to you, Santino, I'm not sure I should ask Andrew Moss this, but I mean, you're offering these courses for just 90 minutes a week. Is
That's
that
correct.
Really enough to make a difference for a kid?
Absolutely. I would ask Santino the same question as well. Like, what do you think about 90 minutes? Is that enough time for us to get through the material?
Yeah, it actually is. And usually we actually have a little bit more time sometimes.
We try and stretch it out whenever possible. So sometimes students come in a little bit early, and sometimes they stay late because they're so engaged in the topic. And we find that our instructors are so enthusiastic about working with these students, because the students themselves are so motivated, that it just stretches out.
But in terms of a kid's educational experience, I mean, you're in school all week long, and then there's this hour and a half. How does that change things, or does it?
It changes it a lot, because I'm actually able to do another program that actually teaches me more, because we usually cannot get that much done in a regular school day, because usually we don't even do science during the week. So, yeah.
Has it changed the way you look at your future? What do you want to do as a career?
I want to get into the biology categories and learn zoology about animals and stuff. I do not want to do marine biology, because you do not know what's down there.
But you're also not thinking of space.
Yeah, not really.
Andrew Moss, tell me about another student whose experience sticks with you.
So we have one student from the 5th and 6th grade espionage class who is very shy, and I was her teacher in that case. And she didn't speak a lot in class, but then ended up taking one of the summer programs out of an interest in the fingerprinting activity that I did with her. And then the following summer program, she took examining the evidence. And as a result, she became so interested in the program and in the subject matter that she decided she wants to be a geneticist. And so she's moved from someone who didn't speak very much to someone who took a fingerprinting class, then took a summer program on forensics, and then learned so much about that and DNA extraction that she ultimately wants to become a geneticist, and is taking another summer program with us, likely in anatomy and physiology. So I think it demonstrates the ability of CTY's programs and the Emerging Scholars Program to take someone who didn't know she had an interest in the topic and then moved it all the way forward to now where it's a possible career path for her.
Santino, how would you summarize the impact of being a Baltimore Emerging Scholar?
I think it really helped me get a different view about science and space. Again, because I get to learn more about space that I did not know about at all. And if I ever have to take space stuff when I go into biology and science, then I'll know more about that, like the Black Hole Project. So then I'll know how to do that.
I really appreciate you both talking to us about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mount Royal Elementary fourth grader Santino Vaughn is a participant in the Baltimore Emerging Scholars Program, which identifies bright students in underserved areas of the city and provides extra academic opportunities for them. Center for Talented Youth Program Manager Andrew Moss has also been with us. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. Tune in tomorrow.